I think we're joined by Rick Sterling. Are you there, Rick?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hi, Rick. We're really glad you're available to us. You've been writing about the subject of the of Syria since the beginning in 2011. And this war has really been terrible. I mean, it has cost a lot of lives, refugees, etc. But it actually took a turn. Maybe you could tell me the dates, but the Syrian government, which is a sovereign government, and you're with the Syria Solidarity Movement, and you've emphasized from the beginning it's a sovereign government. A territory is the responsibility of that sovereign government. They do seem finally to be prevailing, but they have had three or four problems, and one of them is called East Ghouta.
Right.
And there's what they call a pocket there. And they're now moving to defeat the terrorists in that pocket. But we're hearing hullabaloo from the New York Times and every editorial writer. They have to stop the fighting. Talk about that. What is happening in Ghouta, and how do you assess it?
Right. Well, Ghouta they call it East Ghouta, and it's a semi-rural farming area combined with villages, not far from Damascus. And basically, it's on the outskirts of Damascus, and it's been that district has been controlled by different armed opposition or rebel or terrorist, whatever expression you want to use, since 2012. So, in other words, for the last 6 years, that area has been controlled by different armed opposition groups. And since that time, on a daily basis, they launch mortars and Hellcannon missiles into central Damascus. I saw this with my own eyes, and I felt it. The whole hotel shook. I was astounded at the power and the force of a mortar landing on the sidewalk right in front of the hotel where I was staying in April of 2014. It killed several people. And when I returned to Syria in the fall of 2015, we didn't have mortars land on our doorstep, but we heard them landing through the night and in the day. And this is what the people of Damascus have been putting up with since 2012. It'd be like Mississauga or Brampton was controlled by terrorists launching mortars into Toronto on a daily basis. What do you do?
One thing I would assume that all citizens would hope that their government would do something about it.
They would, and I mean, the Syrian government has, in contrast with the message you get in the media, is that the Syrian government is brutally bombing, and there's all these civilians there, they're all being killed, and it's the last hospital, and there's hundreds killed in 1 or 2 days. I think it's a complete distortion of the reality. And in truth, 90% of the civilians left those areas soon after or in the coming months or years after the areas were taken over by the armed opposition groups. So there's very few civilians remaining in East Ghouta. So the impression that we get in the media is a complete distortion.
It's inevitable to me to make comparisons. If I feel like, as the old expression, deja vu all over. Aleppo was described in the media here in exactly the same way.
Right. And yeah, that's a great point, because that's a very good comparison, because we saw the same outcry in December of 2016 as the Syrian government was advancing on East Aleppo. That's the eastern part that was a part of Aleppo. Aleppo was the biggest city and was the industrial powerhouse of Syria. So it was a big city. East Aleppo got overrun by terrorists in the summer of 2012, and the armed factions controlled East Aleppo up until December of 2016. The interesting thing is that the Syrian government prevailed. There, they basically drove out, they expelled the terrorists who had controlled the region, and And what happened is that the civilians who took advantage of a civilian corridor escape route rushed into the government-controlled areas and reported that they had been trapped there, that the terrorists had not allowed them to leave, that they would threaten to kill their family members who remained if they left. Mm-hmm. Some of them were actual prisoners. Mm-hmm. And there were dramatically fewer than the media had been talking about. It the same thing we're hearing now. The story is that there's 400,000 civilians in East Ghouta. It's baloney. It might be 40,000, 10% of what they're claiming. And that was what happened in East Aleppo. But the Western media ran away as fast as they could so that they wouldn't be there to witness the reality when the area was liberated.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, corridors are once again being offered and suggested by the government. On the other side, the terrorist groups, the Al-Qaeda, I assume, linked groups, they're not offering any corridor.
Right. One important, now the so-called ceasefire resolution was passed unanimously in the UN Security Council last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And a key provision of that the Syrian government and Russia, as a permanent member of the Security Council, demanded was that the ceasefire excludes ISIS and the Al-Qaeda-linked officially designated terrorist groups.
Mm-hmm.
So the claim in the New York Times today that the Syrian government is violating the ceasefire, that's the implication of this story, is false because they were specifically excluded. It's point two of the agreed on resolution.
And, by the way, again, it's a mirror. My memory is that's roughly what happened in Aleppo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is.
Where everybody said, "Oh, you're shelling them," and it's not right. Except that their own resolution said, "Of course, it doesn't apply to these guys who, by the way, are not interested in the ceasefire themselves."
Right. And there's another similarity as well, Phil, which is where are these reports coming from? They're coming from on the ground. They're coming from the quote-unquote white helmets. And internationally, they're coming from the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is one guy operating in Coventry, England.
Yeah.
The White Helmets...
he's paragraph one or two every story.
Yeah, exactly. And they've got their videos. Some of the videos, I'm sure, are real because there are real injuries. Let's not pretend there aren't real injuries. But the videos are carefully done. They generally do not show the big picture. It'll be focused on a few people, so you can't really tell, are we looking at three people or 30 or 300, or what's the situation? If you contrast the videos or compare the videos that are shown from Syria with videos of Gaza under attack by Israeli forces, and there's a dramatic difference.
Mm-hmm.
But the White Helmets, they've got their video team. That's their role, really. They're paid by the West, and they're serving the West by sending out these misleading reports.
Yes. And they call themselves humanitarian, but this is a so-called humanitarian group that has called for U.S. To move in. And they also get themselves involved in legal matters of whether or not a crime has been committed. You know, the history of the Red Cross is that it avoided that part of its role was to say, look, you have afflicted here. We're not choosing sides. We just come to help those people who've been hurt.
Right.
And in order to do their work, they had to be neutral in that sense.
White helmets
are like a propaganda agency.
That's it. They were, and a highly successful one, too. I mean, imagine a group.
Two Oscars. Working on a third,
That was seriously proposed, recommended for a Nobel Peace Prize 3 years mm-hmm. after the organization was created by a British military contractor.
Mm-hmm. who, by the way, made no secret of, yes, he did do that. And
right.
No one finds that curious.
Well, some people do. You and I do.
I'm working on three now.
You probably do.
Well, I'm going to ask you, since we're in that realm of propaganda, right at this moment, of course, there's promoting a movie called Last Man in Aleppo.
Yes.
But actually, that's somewhat of a misnomer. There are plenty of men in Aleppo, and more now than were there before, are there not?
Now there actually are. Increasing thousands of people migrating back into East Aleppo. So you're exactly right. It's a complete misnomer. That the so-called last men in Aleppo, of course, are the so-called white helmets.
Yeah, the last terrorists and the propagandists.
And
we're speaking to Rick Sterling. By the way, if you find Rick's writings, Duran and Consortium News.
Yeah, dissident voice, global dissident research. Yeah,
I really urge your writing has been excellent on all these issues, Rick. I want to ask you also. There are two other trouble spots, and I know you keep your eye on these matters. One is Idlib, and then the other is the region of the northeast of Syria, where maybe the most complicated problem still remains to be solved, because the U.S. has, I understand, forces there. What can you say about those situations?
Mm-hmm. Well, Idlib is, there's a city of Idlib and a province of Idlib. It's in northern Syria, bordering Turkey. And that region is controlled by the terrorists, and specifically the Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda version in Syria. And the terrorists who finally were taken by bus from East Aleppo, the civilians were able to flee and go into government-controlled areas. But as an indication of how the Syrian government always tries to negotiate an end to the conflict. Mm-hmm. This is in stark contrast with the impression that the mainstream media gives, of course. But what happened in East Aleppo is the Syrian government made an agreement and said to the remaining terrorists, okay, if you don't want to reconcile, we'll take you by bus to Idlib. And that's what happened. So thousands of terrorists... Mm-hmm. Were taken by bus to Idlib, and that's where they are. That region is dominated by, is still controlled by predominantly Nusra terrorists, and there are other factions at play. Mm-hmm. Now in Afrin, which is a district that's controlled by, that's been controlled by Syrian Kurdish community. That area has resisted the terrorists, and the Syrian Kurds have their own fighting militia called the YPG, People's Protection Units. And early on in the conflict, the Syrian government said, okay, if you want to defend your communities, that's fine. And so they have done that, but in the last 2 or 3 weeks, of course, Turkey has invaded that area and is threatening to try to overrun Afrin, the town of Afrin. The YPG is defending it, and the Syrian militia, Syrian government connected militias are assisting in that. So they're defending against the Turkish invasion. And you're right, it is complicated because, of course, Turkey is a member of NATO, led by the United States. The U.S. tried to win over the YPG, the Kurdish, the Syrian Kurds, and try to use them as kind of a proxy force that would carry out the wishes of the U.S. So it does get a little bit complicated because you've got the U.S., you've got the Kurds fighting against the Turks at the same time as they've been paid and supplied to some extent by the U.S., and yes, the U.S. is trying to kind of play a game of really divide and conquer. They're trying to break, break up
Syria. They want to hold all those cards and not give any of them up.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Somebody is going to be given up here, I assume.
Right. Another good thing about the resolution that was passed unanimously in the UN Security Council is it does affirm the importance of the territorial integrity of Syria.
Yes.
And so the U.S. is on record acknowledging acknowledging respect for that important principle of international law. Unfortunately, they say one thing and they do something else. Well, why have they set up air bases in eastern Syria?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they continuing to operate there without authorization from the Syrian government?
Yeah, and occasionally producing headlines which are bizarre about how they've killed 100 Russians, but then they didn't really, and maybe some, but
right.
sort of growling and barking.
Yeah.
It looks to me like it's untenable what the U.S. has done in terms of the personnel there. This is a remote, this is a difficult area logistically to sustain.
Yeah.
But do you get the impression that they actually believe they're going to try to stay?
Well, I think they want to stop the Syrian government from prevailing in the conflict. They want to drag it out. They want to drag it out and delay. They want to be prevent the Syrian government from succeeding in defeating terrorism and recapturing the entire, geography of Syria. So they're kind of playing a spoiler role at this point. What their long-term strategy is, going to be, we'll have to see. But right now they're playing a negative role. They've attacked Syrian forces a couple of times directly,
mm-hmm.
Going back to Deir ez-Zor, actually, in the
yes.
in the fall of 2016, when it was still Obama and John Kerry as Secretary of State.
Yeah.
So the U.S. is playing kind of
Democrats
a dirty role there.
Yes.
Canada's in there as well. Canada, as well as France and the U.K., have all been part of the
Yes.
coalition of countries that have violated international law
yes.
against
Mr. Macron
Syria.
Made this frightening or absurd or ignorant statement. He said that if they heard or could was shown, and he was talking to the White Helmet, that there was chemicals used, then France would do something.
I know.
I mean,
yeah, this
extremely
is
extremely provocative.
Right, and then so coming back to your overall question of what's going on, Phil. I think what's going on is the international countries that have been trying to overthrow the Syrian government since the beginning, 2011, they are trying to prevent the Syrian government from recapturing East Ghouta. That's what it
mm-hmm.
really boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the cries about humanitarian tragedy and all of this stuff, it's either half true or completely false.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to prevent the recapture of it, just as they tried to prevent the recapture of East Aleppo, which now you've got people, Syrians who left Syria, went to Turkey, went to different parts of Syria, returning to East Aleppo.
Yes.
The solution to the refugee crisis is get rid of terrorism and let people go home.
Restore the sovereignty of Syria.
Right, exactly.
And by the way, that to my mind, the most insidious part of this, I really it offends me the way the Canadian government and others withdraw recognitions, close embassies, create
yeah.
a nightmare
yes.
for Syrians, particularly Syrians living abroad. You close the embassy. It's
right.
like you've withdrawn recognition. It's open season on the government that you treat like that.
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty disgusting, and there's another element of
this. Passive aggression, which Canada's pretty
yeah,
good at.
Yeah, and the West has looked the other way as their citizens have been brainwashed and it traveled to Turkey and then into Syria to join with the terrorist groups. And as we know, hundreds of Canadians were part of that.
Yes.
And
the Prime Minister is welcoming them back, actually.
Well, he's welcoming them back. Some other countries are saying they can't come back. But the real perversion here is that these countries allowed their citizens to get to do this, to basically
yes.
become terrorists.
Yes.
Many of them have been killed. And isn't that a crime to look the other way as your own citizens are being brainwashed and then being fooled into going to another country and joining a terrorist group?
Yeah, sounds like a crime to me. Rick Sterling, it's great talking to you. Your articles are so helpful, and we hope we can talk to you again soon. Maybe as this matter in Gouda unfolds, we'd like to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks very much, Phil. Always happy.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Rick Sterling, Consortium News, Duran, elsewhere. He just put his name in, right, Syria, and all the things you've been hearing about. You find in his writings, a highly respected writer in the Bay Area of California.